I am Mustafa Sanjada. I am a first-generation Muslim from Ohio. I am a chef and a baker who happens to, or by Allah's permission, we run a food shelf, one of the largest standalone food shelves in the state of Minnesota. My childhood, I was adopted as a child, so I don't know my real lineage. But I was adopted by some African-American parents who were migrant workers on the East Coast of the United States. So I was raised in a Southern Baptist type home. My father wasn't much for religion, though. My mother was more so a church elder. So we went to church with my mother. In our upbringing, but I think I learned more of the Bible from my father, because on the weekends he would sit at home and he would have us practice reading it and reciting it. So I spent 8 years in the United States Army. I was stationed in what's now Germany, but in West Germany at the time, and in Southern Korea. But while I was in Germany, I met some Muslims from Senegal. And they were there selling precious stones from West Africa. And the dawah began. I began to learn and read the Quran. And at this point is when I accepted Islam. As I left Germany, I came back home for a time. And I worked at home. I was by that time, we were living in a small college town in Ohio. And so I went to this college, and I was a college cop for 6 years. So I was a police officer on a college campus. But the fortunate thing about that situation was I had the keys to everything. So I had the keys to the library. So for 3 years, I had my own Dean Intensive. Anything they had on Islam, I read it, you know. Even about the Shia, you know. Anything. Sufism, anything, I read it, you know. I took it all in. And then I started to make contact with the Muslims that were going there to the college. So at that point in time, it actually gave me the impetus to find a masjid. You know, where's the nearest masjid to me, you know? So I did that, and it was the most wonderful experience I think I've ever had, actually joining with a community, you know. There was a little masjid just beginning. I think this was the beauty of it in Akron, Ohio, which is my birthplace. And it was a very eclectic mixture of MSA, people from all different countries. Of course, the highest population there were African Americans, of course, at that point in time. But it made for a wonderful mix of people and ideas, even within the realm of Islam. So it was a wonderful place for me to start. Well, I think in 1998, I think it was, I moved to Minnesota to get married. And this was before the great immigration of Somalis. There was only like maybe two or three masjid in the whole city. That's unimaginable now. I mean, you can't even imagine what that was like. And so there wasn't a lot of community with those three masajid. You had to kind of belong to the groups or the cliques that ran the masjids to feel a part of it anyway at that point in time. And so I took my family and I moved to Detroit. And I lived in Detroit for 3 years. It was, you know, the truth of the matter is, wherever I've been, you know, and I left Minnesota the first time because I thought I was going to go and find this utopian community, you know. But wherever I've been, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as this utopian community. Your community is what is you and your arm. Is what you make it, you know. This wasn't the land when I first came of 60 masjids. It is getting close to that now. the influx. Wow. I mean, when I came back and saw all of the halal butchers and all of the different masjid, I mean, you can imagine my face was like, wow. You know, look at that. This is better than Detroit, you know. I think it was a very, very awesome thing. And so that was a big plus to see that the Muslim population had more than tripled, and people established the Salat by establishing the masjids and making sure of where their food came from, which is my forte, of course, by having the halal butchers and the different restaurants and shops. That was just awesome. It was great, and it still remains that way too as well. So, yeah, I think some of the issues that I see in the community, especially around the youth, is that we don't have enough programs to engage them. So we have to come up with some alternatives to engage the youth in how to live here in America and do those things and be a part of society, but in a way that is complementary to our religion and to our deen. Do I have the answer for that? No. No. But I am constantly looking, because I have three teenage boys and a little girl who's coming up. And, you know, I have seen, we can't blame it on any one thing, but I've seen some very good Muslim mothers and fathers and their children just go away from their deen of Islam. Was it their fault? Probably not. They were practicing their religion, you know, and Allah is the doer, you know. But what could have we have done to maybe circumvent that, to engage them more, to make them see the relevance in being Muslim in this country, you know? Does my work complement my Islamic faith? But for sure. For sure. It is the epitome of sadaqah, of giving, of often people come and they say, well, thank you, this is a great help, you know, this is a blessing. And I tell them, you know, I didn't do anything. I just moved it from one spot over there and I brought it here so you could get it, you know. But the time and the effort that is made in doing these things, from the people who donate, to the food banks, to the food shelves, to the people who come in and get it, it complements my Islamic belief, my Islamic faith, like it was meant for me to do, you know. Yeah, because it being on the inside of it and seeing the effects of poverty and of hunger, and being able to, by the grace of Allah, do something about it, I felt like I had been promoted to President of the United States. I thought, what a blessing, what a job. You know, it doesn't matter that I don't make $100,000 a year or any of those things. I'm actually doing something that benefits people, and I can sleep at night. You know? And it became a love for me, a work of love, and we've aspired at it ever since. And I think we're doing well. Wow, what makes Minnesota special? A lot of things. Having been around the United States and lived in many different states, and for countries for that matter, I think the most special thing about Minnesota for me is the way that it takes care of its people. I haven't seen this grade or this level of taking care of its people from any people, maybe outside of Germany. Germany had the closest system of their social parties, where they took care of the people, and the people were first and foremost. Where the status of a citizen surpassed that of a consumer, you know, they took care of people. And I think Minnesotans do that very, very well. And you can tell that by the influx of people who are constantly coming. Constantly coming to Minnesota. It makes you almost wonder how long it's going to last. But at the same time, it's a wonderful thing about Minnesota. Even with the politics being one of budgetary constraints and less money around to do things, people still find ways to do things and to take care of people. And I think that's the overwhelming great thing about Minnesota. But it is absolutely beautiful too in the spring, you have to admit. Yes, do I feel that the state is welcoming to Muslims? Yes, I do. Even with all that's happened, you know, when 2001 happened, I was working at the VA in their food service department. And I came outside one day, and I was leaving work, and there was an African-American guy on the phone, on his cell phone, and I heard him say to whoever he was talking to, you know, they ought to pack them all up and move them back to Africa. Well, having grown up in the 60s here in the United States, and having heard that insult hurled at African-Americans themselves, it was appalling to hear an African-American say that about the Somali people. Not only because they're my Muslim brothers and sisters, but after all we have been through as a people, African-American people, African or African-American people, why would you say something that would be so ignorant? You know, I just couldn't understand that. But even though you have people who feel that way, and there are grievances from the Somalis to the African Americans, and from the African Americans to the Somalis, and my thing has always been, my advice has always been to African Americans is this: get to know before you judge and before you insult. I am an African American, and I don't do some of the things that you do. So does that make me not African American? You know, does that make me that different? And my advice always to the Somali community or to any immigrant community is that African-American Muslims have been here all of our lives. And we have had to face the trials and the tribulations. We've had to establish a lot at our workplaces against all odds and fight ignorant notions of Islam. And we have established for ourselves what we think is a comfortable way of life in the United States with being Muslim and being American. That my advice to the Somalis and to any immigrant group is to use us as a tool to understand. You know, have I experienced discrimination? Funny enough, I have, and I think it's it's kind of funny. To be point blank about it, because you know, as an African American, I was one of the first kids in the United States where I was at in Ohio to be bused to all white schools, you know, and I felt a lot of discrimination then, you know. And I think I experienced probably that type of discrimination every day. So, but when 9/11 came, I think it gave those who would be anti-Muslim or just people who hate anyway, that's what I call them. Mm-hmm. Because I felt their hate because I was black. And then after 2011, I felt their hate because I was Muslim. And so they're the same people. They haven't changed. They just found someone else to hate. And for a different reason, you know, it doesn't matter. There's just people who are going to hate because they want things to be their way and in their comfort zone. So they don't change from one monster to the next because they create their own monsters. You see, so I think we have more people defending Islam in the United States of America than there are people who hate it. And the people who hate it don't even know why they hate it. They just listen to someone else. But does global politics impact my life in Minnesota? Not as much as it could. But, you know, global politics affects us all, you know. And there's a lot of things going on out there right now towards Islam that are defeating. But yet, instead of getting excited and protesting everything that happens in the world, some you know, guy comes up with burn Quran day and you know, the Muslims lose their mind. You know, of course, you feel bad. You know, this is the word of Allah, you know. But the first thing I thought about when I heard that story was Abraha, the Kaaba, you know, and how it was said to leave, it's Allah's house, he'll take care of his house, you know. It's just like the Quran. It's Allah's book. You know, this is Mus'haf. It's His word. He's gonna take care of it. You know, we don't have to go out and overturn cars and you know, smash up windows and do that because they're doing that to get that kind of reaction out of us, so they can hold us up to the mirror of the world and say, regard the loveless. Look at the loveless. Look how they are. This is why we should treat them less than human, because they're not human. So every time we react like that, we feed into their psychoses or their psychology of us. And I think we should do the opposite. Like Rasulullah said, if they do this, do the opposite. I think we should do the opposite, you know. And I think it would kill a lot of those things. You know, they would just give up interest because, you know, if they're not going to get a whole bunch of news hits off of it, or, you know, if everybody isn't going to post it on Facebook, then what's the purpose, you know? Common misconceptions. What are some of the common misconceptions about Islam? There are a lot of them, actually. Because you have people out there taking an ayat and saying, you know, this is the totality of what Muslims think about other people or how they feel about this or that. The same could be done for the Bible. We could take verses and even chapters out of the Bible and say, okay, this is how Christians are. You know, this is what they think about other people. You know, this is how they feel. This is what they think they should do. So I think there's a lot of common misperceptions because of ignorance or the lack of proper teaching about it. And to a large degree, I blame that on us. If you don't take the opportunity to right some misperceptions, then how can you complain about them? What we believe about martyrdom or suicide bombings or all of these things, you know. Anyone who understands Islam and who Allah has given an understanding of the deen of Islam knows that committing suicide is not a part of our deen, no matter what it's for. To me, when someone goes and blows themselves up because they feel that that's the only way that they can get back at their oppressor, they've given up hope in Allah. They've given up hope that Allah will take care of their situation. You know. Yeah. What lessons do I think people or Muslims today can take from the lessons of the civil rights era and those times after? The biggest thing that was taught was nonviolence. And to bide our time. You know, you fight things at a grassroots level. You try to change things where you're at. You know, this is what we're taught. You know, if you dislike a thing, try to change it with your hand. You know, if you can't change it with your hand, then say something. Say something about it. Talk about it. If you can't do that, then at least hate it in your heart. And this is the least of belief. Yes, this is what we're taught. Wow. What do I see for Muslims in Minnesota in the future? You know, I think in this country, the diversity in this country and the coming together of peoples in this country, it allows us to see things on so many different levels, with so many different lights, if we take advantage of it, that we're I believe we'll be in the forefront of a lot of different things, a lot of different movements. Yeah.